Good evening and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmeyer, coming to you live as I do every Thursday night at 9 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Tonight, we'll be speaking with Deborah Paulman, makeup artist for the stars, discussing entertainment as a window to the mind and a mirror to the soul in the cycles of change. Deborah has a unique perspective in her profession on how our national trends shape the genres that are so popular. As we draw patterns in the wake of our choices, she is the current makeup artist for Conan O'Brien on TBS, and she has worked with The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien as supervisor of makeup of NBC TV New York. She has more than 20 years of makeup experience in film and television production, including an Emmy nomination. She worked at Saturday Night Live, NBC, As the World Turns, CBS, One Life to Live, ABC, and she was the makeup artist for the 58th Annual Emmy Award host Conan O'Brien. She will discuss the changes she has witnessed and tell us a little bit about the profession that reflects our choices, what makes us laugh, what makes us cry, and how we see ourselves and the world around us. Deborah, are you there?
I am, David. How are you?
Okay, Deborah. Thank you. You're coming in from California, are you not?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Deborah, can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing currently in your profession?
Right now I'm working with Conan O'Brien on his show for TBS. We're starting our third season, having come out from New York with him. I've been with him for 12 years now and done other things as well, more so when we were in New York. But for the most part, I work with him now and the show and do all kinds of wacky things.
And as noted in the introduction, the Conan O'Brien show is not the first nationwide show that you've worked on, is it?
Oh, no. I've been doing this for over 25 years. And, you know, I was looking at old resumes and thinking about how I'd gotten started. And when I started out, it was a completely different world. It was television at its best. I love television. I have done movies and stuff like that. I don't like doing movies. I just love television. And when, when I was starting out, television was a craft. It was as technical a craft as is lighting or directing or anything like that. And today it's changed. For me, it's very sad to see the changes that have come along for my craft anyway, as a makeup artist. I did an apprenticeship at NBC back in the 80s, and in those days there were no makeup schools and all that kind of stuff, all kinds of junk that's available now that are more in line with them making money than teaching you makeup, and particularly makeup for the different mediums, be it television, video, photography, film, now high definition. And so it's really interesting when I think about all the changes and thinking back to how I thought back then, thinking how could anything change? You know, I used to think about my father's generation and all the technical and technological stuff that had changed over his lifetime, never realizing that my lifetime would be just as capable with the onset of cable television and now certainly computers and the internet and all that. And it's interesting that it seems the internet is, I don't want to say taking over television, but it's certainly become hugely important, or at least hugely competitive with what used to be network television.
Network television ruled the day. A quarter century ago, we didn't have so many cable subscribers. We didn't have high-definition television sets, and as you mentioned, the internet. And there's an interactivity now. Nothing is just for a static observation from an uninvolved viewer. People are saying, well, tweet us during the show. And they will also have their Facebook pages and interactive going on at the same time. And that this is a trend that's going to continue even more. But it's interesting, as we're moving more into high-definition television, it seems to me that there would be a greater need to maintain the integrity of the artistry and the tradesmanship that goes into makeup. Would that not make sense to you?
Absolutely, and more so than ever before, because of the intensity of the clarity involved in high-definition television. This type of video, you know, in the old days, back in the 80s, 90s, when we just had standard video, when I was on soaps, for example, for years, I've gone back and forth between starting my career, so to speak, mostly at NBC with my apprenticeship and stayed there for about 7 years, and then moved into soaps. And I remember the first time I walked onto a set, and I walked into on One Life to Live, which wasn't the first time, but the one that, because I had watched that as a child, you know, as a youngster, you know, walking onto the set of a library, you know, in the fancy home of the Buchanans, I think was the Renning family. Mm-hmm. And those books were fake, but the flowers were real, and the sets were right next to each other. And you could get away with anything. You know, it's almost like today you would have to put filters on top of all these camera lenses in order to go back to what was then standard television, standard video. And makeup-wise, on As the World Turns, for example, we had one actress who was elderly and she fell a lot, and often she'd come in with bruises and such, and it was no problem to cover that up with makeup. Yeah. And the old ways of doing makeup where you would use colors to opposite colors to get rid of green skin tones or, you know, different skin tones, those old ways of doing makeup don't apply anymore. And in high definition, you really have to understand how things are accentuated more so. For example, if you were to put makeup, you know, if you had a blemish you were covering and there were no other makeup on the face, by changing the texture of the skin, by adding makeup to that one little spot, that one little spot's going to stand out now because you've changed the texture of that one little spot.
Yes.
So the intensity of it is incredible. And you have to understand that these are, you know, huge changes that happen in color of makeup, in texture and tone of makeup, and what you're seeing. You know, there are a couple of shows I watch, you know, and the kinds of things that you see, everything now. Your hair, you know, little things that you'd never see before. And lighting, where I've always worked very closely with lighting directors, and we work together. And today it's quite different because even, you know, lighting can't, where lighting could have hidden, whether it was ear hair or whatever, discolored eyelashes, which all that stands out now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really huge changes from before. I would rather see high definition held for, you know, sports events and those types of things, or travel shows, or things where you really need to see, where it's really advantageous to see those awesome colors, you know, and
yes,
that kind of clarity. I don't think regular TV really needs it, but as you mentioned, trends and everything else, once one starts to do it, another does. Our show, Late Night with Conan O'Brien, was the first one to go on the air. Especially
on
television. It was the very first show to go high def.
Wow.
And I was gifted because we had a high definition camera for 6 months prior to going on air, live in high definition. We had a camera in high def upstairs taping the show so that it allowed me to experiment and teach myself as we went along without. Because we were still in standard, I could, you know, what you were seeing at home, you couldn't see what I was doing, you know, experimenting and such. I could see it on the high-def cameras and the playbacks. And So I was really blessed that I had that 6 month time to really understand it. And I find it really annoying when people talk about high definition and have no experience with it, you know. But by the same token, it's even gone to commercial markets, you know, and commercial buying of makeup and commercial products. And everybody talks about high definition this and high definition that. And half the time, they really don't know what they're talking about. But because it's one of those trends, it's another means of a lot of people making a lot of money with, you know, again, not really knowing what it is that they're talking about.
Well, I think there's a great lesson to be learned here, parallel to what you're finding in entertainment. Because as we get more technical skills and more advanced tools, we tend to rely on these new toys as they were, while not necessarily maintaining the integrity of the artistry that was involved before we were using them. So there must be something transcendent in all this. You know, I've seen some of these old documentaries. I love the old movies.
Me too.
Oh, my, yes. And sometimes I'll come across something that we'll talk about. The makeup that used to be involved with old black and white films, the test reels that they would do. And the experimentation, and it's just dramatic, some of the things that were done. For instance, if you wanted the dress to be just super black on a set, you would use a red dress, because on black and white film, it would come out as black.
Exactly.
And there was an entire art,
I think Turner Classic Movies, which I watch a lot, had a series, I think it was called MGM Parade. And you might still be able to find it. And every now and then they would do a little short half-hour documentary about how things were done. And they'd throw in like a movie test for Elizabeth Taylor's makeup or Barbara Stanwyck's makeup. And you'd really get a clearer idea into what went into all of these looks and whether or not they worked and whether or not they were acceptable. And, you know, even think about, you know, the lighting for Greta Garbo and Grand Hotel, for example. I mean, they spent hours, you know, working on, you know, for one shot.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think there's anything that will ever replace the beauty of those black and white films. And it's kind of sad. It saddens me when I see them colored in, like, you know.
Quite agree.
You know, it just kind of takes away from that whole genre.
Jimmy Stewart made a public announcement, by the way, which was televised. I just was fortunate to catch that moment where he said, please stop this abomination of colorizing the old black and white films.
Mm-hmm. And I know there for a couple different times, a couple different periods, there were a number of people that were totally against that because they felt that they were really destroying not only the craftsmanship and the beauty of the piece, but it's like anything else historically, you're changing history almost as if you're hiding it. And 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, that'll all be gone. And nobody will have known, you know, where we came from and the art. And, you know, you mentioned the technology. I mean, I get nervous that my job's going to be taken over by a computer someday.
I would be surprised, but I'll tell you, but just relying on the bottom line of a profit and everything and forgetting the artistry involved would be like hanging a drop ceiling in the Sistine Chapel because it's going to save on heating bills. I mean, come on.
That's practical. You know, that's the part that really amazes me. And I've been through, for example, when I was at ABC for a little while and Capital Cities took over, when I was at NBC, they were two times when NBC was bought out. I think the first time was by RCA back in the 80s, and then GE later on, I guess, or I may have that backwards. But it all became about money, and at those times, they had tried to cut out hair and makeup as if it were a luxury service. And what used to shock me, and still does, is that here you are, you're spending millions of dollars in some cases, and at least hundreds of thousands in, you know, TV shows, and all the writing and the lighting and the background and the sets and everything else. And what your viewer is actually looking at are the faces of the talent. And that's where you're going to cut back on the money?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you're doing all this beauty, you know, you're putting, just like you were talking about with the Sistine Chapel. Well, you do all that, and now you can't even see the ceiling anymore, and you're ruining it. So
there's a tremendous lesson in all of this. There really is.
Yeah.
Because this is going to parallel. I've been talking about how the cycles of the world are changing. And one of the main things I talk about is how the physical cycle that was high and gave us our machine age is now low and declining. While at the same time, the intellectual cycle that was low is just breaking up high and is rising. Okay, so what is bringing about these changes that we're seeing as we're moving more towards high definition and more technical tools? Well, we're seeing a lessening of the physical and going more towards the intellectual alternative. Now, for example, in special effects, the effects are less practical effects and more computer generated. We have CG effects to do things that would actually have to be acted out with stunt cars, stunt
right.
people, and so forth. But sometimes that diminishes the quality. So if we're going to get less physical and more technical, okay, fine, as long as we maintain the thread, the consistency of what has to be brought as we come out of one familiar zone of operation and into the next one. And I think that what you're saying in the world of makeup, of television and film, bids a warning to us in whatever field we're in. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to what's happening in entertainment from this point of view and think, how does that affect you in your office in what you're doing? Are you relying too much on the new technical tools and forgetting our roots? Remember, when the internet bubble burst in 2000, what were the businesses that survived 99 and 2000 crash, as it's called? It's those businesses that weren't all virtual and just nothing but a room full of computers and telephones, because you had people who thought mediators were going to rule the world. The businesses that survived that crash were brick and click. So yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, as we move more technical and away from the physical, fine, I know yin and yang fluctuate and we keep everything in balance, but you've got to get down to the nitty gritty and hold on to physical reality and keep your feet on the ground. Deborah, what do you think of that?
I absolutely agree with you. It's, you know, it's similar. What that brings to mind is, you know, with everybody communicating by virtue of Facebook or online, everything is computers, people don't use the phones anymore, and the isolation that can bring to some people, and just from us as human beings who used to interact, even just talking on the phone sometimes is so different from what out this new generation is getting so used to it and has grown up with by communicating via computers and not human interaction.
Yes.
You know, and I think there's something very sad about that. I used to teach my nieces when they were little how to write thank you notes. And handwritten yeah. thank you notes. And even something as simple as that is so, it's kind of lost. I don't know many people who do it anymore.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, and word of mouth is still a very valuable tool. And sometimes that makes it to print. You know, I'm on your website right now, Deborah, which is DeborahPaulman.com. Now, I want to let everyone know that Paulman has two N's on the end. So when you go to Deborah Paulman, it's DeborahPaulman.com.
PaulMann. Correct.
DeborahPaulman.com. And I'm on your press page here. I see a write-up about your work in the New York Times and Mail Online and Makeup Artist Magazine. I have a full article on you. And we've got to remember our basic values as we go forward. What would you say is the biggest change we've seen in television? Of all the things that have happened in the past quarter century, what is the most remarkable thing that strikes you, Deborah?
You know, I think, again, it goes back to going into, I guess, the joining of television and the Internet.
Yes.
You know, I used to think of, you know, years ago when first of all, when television first came out and everybody only had one little screen in their home, if they had it at all, and then certainly when black and white turned into color and what a big deal
yes.
that was.
Yes.
And then, you know, larger screens and what a big deal that was. and plasmas and LCDs and all these things. And now, you know, I remember having a conversation with my niece that she was watching something, she was watching a television show online, and I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
She was watching it online. And to me, I just, it's, I don't know what's going to happen in the world of, you know, it's changing right before my eyes. I know on our show, the digital, I think it's Team Coco online, is probably, ratings-wise, if there is even such a thing anymore, is much more outstanding than the actual program itself.
Yes.
Even though it is TBS and people can't find it. I mean, I know we used, you and I may have been used to, you know, CBS, and on the East Coast, Channel 2 was CBS, and NBC was Channel 4, and ABC was Channel 7, and even when Fox came out, that was a new thing, Channel 5, you know, and they fought to become something. And now it's just so interesting because so many different things are available that I just really have to know what you're looking for.
That's true, and the computer sometimes will supplement the TV program, or sometimes it's the sole means by which we view it, like Hulu.com. You can watch entire episodes of programming, and there are internet television stations, as it were, that are set up. You're listening to us now, folks, on internet radio. It used to be all terrestrial radio, what you got over the airwaves, something that you get through your antenna, through the antenna. If the antenna breaks, you use a wire coat hanger. That's not the way that we do it now. I had a black and white TV back then. And if the coat hangers didn't work, I'd put a little aluminum foil on them, too. Can't do that now. Well, Deborah, you really have an inside, you know, it's interesting inside point of view, because you prepare people for the stage, and yet you're working backstage. And that's why it's really wonderful to hear how you see things, because you're really looking at things from both sides now, like Joan Collins, who looked at clouds from both sides now. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a perspective. Where do you see us going? Are we going more in this direction from which we've come? Do you have a forecast, an outlook of where we may be headed in television and entertainment in general?
I can't help but think that we're going to continue into this phase, you know, toward internet. And
I agree.
Because, you know, monetarily, it's so much less expensive. And as you had mentioned, you know, people like me, craftsmen like me, a little bit at a time, everything just kind of gets chopped away wherever they can save a dollar, and it's so much less expensive. There's so much less production, so to speak, that goes into it. And certainly the clarity and everything that we had to do, you know, today for high def or for film even, you know, everything can be changed or altered on computers. I did a makeup last week on, and it was a new Star Wars character in the new Star Wars movie that I hand painted. And I think, you know, I think about movies like Avatar, as you had mentioned, all these new computerized movies coming out. And, I wonder half the time if you'd even know the difference. And it took me a couple of hours to do this one makeup. I'll put it up on the website. And it was just, you know, stuff like that is like, why would they pay me, you know, the money that they, whatever it is that they pay me for, to spend 3 hours on something when, you know, technologically they can probably just bring it up on a computer or have a graphic artist do it in probably 5 minutes. You know?
Well, we got to look at the long time trends on this. You know, I made analogies into other businesses, the computer bust of 2000, but I also saw in architecture. In 1972, Hurricane Agnes ravaged the town of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, surrounding areas in the Wyoming Valley. And I traveled up to see the aftermath of that that flood where the river rose 40 feet. And sometimes I would see houses in the middle of the street. And in every case, I saw a house that was destroyed or actually taken off of its foundation. It was a new house, maybe something that was built in the 1960s. Yet the older houses that were built in the 1920s or the 19th century were standing strong and solid, and they didn't budge. And what's interesting is these recent houses were built when we had power tools and we had backhoes, bulldozers, steam shovels up before this recently, and all these electricity being used in so much of the construction. And we had these greater tools, and it's so much easier to build. And instead of doing the great strengths that we had before, we were putting them together faster and cheaper, but they didn't last. Houses of cards. I think this is coming to me just in this conversation. I didn't foresee the lesson that may be coming through in what you're telling us now, a warning against being penny wise and dollar foolish.
Yeah. I mean, and in terms of what you're just speaking about, I mean, look at stuff like the pyramids and I mean, all these things, those things that have stood for thousands of years. I mean, not that we should return back to hand-carrying mortars and, you know, cement blocks or however it is. I really don't know how they made them, but, I mean, that to me is as fascinating as, you know, what's going on now. But I think in, you know, for a viewer, you know, for somebody who's, whether you're watching a movie or a television show, I just, to me, it just saddens me. I just feel like so much is going to be lost, and I hope they do, you know, hold on to the old movies, and, you know, and it's, I mean, I know a lot of stuff is archived, thank God, and at least technology allows us to save stuff like that, so I'd rather see more of that kind of thing where we're using it to preserve so that we can look back instead
Absolutely.
Of walking so far forward that we forget where we came from. In terms of anything, you know, something to be said for history repeating itself. And, you know, so that seems like two sides of a fence. And it's all very interesting when, you know, especially to hear you talking about, you know, the tides of change. And I was looking on your website with the different Kilorivet rhythms, and changes. And it's as fascinating as it is, I don't want to say scary, but it leaves one with a lot to think about.
Well, it gives us some warnings, and my website that you mentioned is kalarhythms.org. It's kalarhythms.org. But as we look at this, we know we have more choices now as we're building these new tools and we're developing greater powers. We've got to consider our choices in the new light. Because, it's not just the sweat of our brow, but it's our ability to create. You can push a button and things happen, great and small. You know, and intelligence is the ability to learn. Intellect is how much you learn. Knowledge may be what you've amassed, maybe how much data. But wisdom is knowing how to use that knowledge. And so as we're being given more choices, if we're creating more choices for ourselves, how will we choose? And this is the message of the study of cycles, to look at the undulations of time so that we can learn from lessons past and apply them now. Mm-hmm. If we know where we're coming from, we know where we are, we know where we are, we know where we're going. And the way to put that in context is to look over time. Your many years of experience in the entertainment field gives us a contrast. So many of us, especially those of us who are less than 25 years old, are just looking at things as they are, not knowing where they're coming from. But Deborah, you have a perspective on where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of why I love television so much. You know, it was all these different crafts working together and building things and, you know, and people working together and creating something that was, you know, beautiful to look at.
It's an art.
it really is. And to me, it really saddens me again that I just feel like, you know, inevitably it's going to be lost, because it's, whether it's about saving money, you know, by corporate, you know, which also, you know, television used to be, it was talent oriented and it was, you know, entertainment people. And this has been so, in so many different ways, it's just been taken over by different corporations. And as we go more corporate, of course, if they're looking to save money, they're going to cut back wherever they can. At NBC in New York, and I probably shouldn't be saying this, but when prior to one of the last takeovers, and they were, again, they were trying to save money. And Sue Simmons, who is a dear friend as well as one of the greatest anchors, I think, ever because of her personality, she had it written into her contract that she had hair and makeup supplied for her. And thank God she did, because at that point the network was fighting with the unions trying to get rid of hair and makeup or forcing talent to bring their own hair and makeup. And again, for people who, talent who were so used to having that, they didn't want to go out and pay for it, or they would go to a local salon, you know, or Bloomingdale's or whatever, and have their hair and makeup done, and it was inadequate and not right to look at, but how, you know, corporate people don't know what they're looking for, you know, and what they're looking at.
And you mentioned the human element. We must maintain the individuality and what's best for the person, maintaining the generic skills, yes. Mm-hmm. But let's take a look at writing. You know, I heard it mentioned about the old Jack Benny show, that they would plan a guest that would come onto the show, but then they would write the comedy skit that suits the personality of the guest that they were having on.
Yeah.
And so it's very much a human element in the case of acting. Well, in all of the supporting artistry for the setting, for the stage, for the makeup, for the lighting, we must also include the human aspect of it, because you lose it. Now the writing is they just write a comedy skit and they look for an actor to fill that role.
Right.
And it doesn't always go together that well. And
no.
So you start with the human level. We've got to maintain our individuality. You know, the principle of individuation is philosophized as far back as we know is from philosophers such as Duns Scotus and so forth. And it's going to have some philosophical arguments as we go forth into a virtual world where you have an anonymity to our identities that we create, our multiple identities that we have on the social networks and our email addresses and what we're going to do. And sometimes people don't even meet face-to-face when we're doing
right.
business across seas with Skype.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've got to learn, as just as some houses wash out into the streets when the floods come, if they're the newer houses that lost the old principles, or the quality of programming because we've lost the ability to write for the guests instead of writing script and hoping to fill in the blanks with whatever big pen of a guest we find, then I think that there's a mirror relationship in the things that you're telling us. We've got to consider our individuality and choose wisely on our choices. And the only way that we can do that is to look at the cycles of time, past, present, and future. Folks, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio broadcast at blogtalkradio.com/cycles. We're speaking with Deborah Paulman, makeup artist for the stars. I invite you to go over to her site at deborahpaulman.com. Paulman with two N's as in Nancy. So it's deborahpaulman.com. Deborah, you also work on individuals, do you not, as well as programs? You have individual clients right there in California that come to you.
I do. Leaving New York, it was a little scary because I was leaving behind, you know, a clientele and people that I had loved to work with and had worked with for years. I do other things and other projects, and which is often very fun, you know, for me. There was some kind of a charity, I don't remember which charity event, but we were doing characters. And it was just, it was nice, and it was funny that Andy Richter, who I work with on a daily basis on our show at Conan, was the host of this charity event that I don't think was being televised, but I think it was available online. And it was just nice to work, you know, and doing something a little different, but still, you know, just feeling the rewards of my craft, you
yes.
know, in such a nice atmosphere. You know, it reminds me also I had done the concert for New York City at Madison Square Garden when, it was October 2002, and all the stars came together to try to raise money for, for September 11th, I guess.
There was some epic congregation of stars. Well, there was the We Are the World event as one. So right. That's only one of them.
And there was one that I had done with Will Ferrell. At the time, I was working with him on Saturday Night Live and some of his personal stuff. But there was this appearance at Madison Square Garden. And I just, what I thought was so beautiful was, first of all, that, you know, to be standing backstage and touching him up last second prior to him walking on stage, and to be standing basically looking out at Madison Square Garden, and at the time President Clinton and his wife, First Lady Hillary Clinton, were sitting in the front row, and it was so amazing to me. He was playing George Bush, was his main character at that time, and I mean, it was just a beautiful, you know, for a purpose, and it was just such, for me as an artist, it was a great experience, you know, and all the stuff that was going on, it was just such good stuff in light of, you know, such, you know, sad things that had brought us together, and
but the human element and the technical capabilities of putting together a master performance like this and televising it all around the world is an example of getting it right. You know, using these new tools that we've developed for the, you know, the human component.
Right.
And as opposed to losing ourselves because of the fast and ready tools that we develop.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's like when you started, you know, it's like today reality shows are so popular.
Yes.
And I don't know that there's any reality show that I watch, quite honestly. But it's like I remember when the Judge shows first started and got so out of hand. There were, you know, a gazillion of them all of a sudden. And I worked on one for a little while when I was in between shows, and Judge Mills Lane, who I think had also been, he'd worked in boxing as a referee.
Yes.
Or something, and to watch how these shows were put together, and the plaintiffs were kept on one side and the defendants kept on another, and the producer's job was basically to get them all riled up so that they made this vicious, you know, just this vicious show. You know, and I remember the first, when I was working on the Donahue show, Phil Donahue, the first time I experienced anything like it, I couldn't believe it, and we're going back to the 80s.
Yes, big show that was, too.
Yeah, and there was, I was working on a woman, and another, I was making up a woman for the show, and another woman came and sat two chairs away and just waited for her turn, and the woman sitting in my chair was going on and on about her mother-in-law and what a horrible person she was, and this apparently was the theme of what the show was going to be, dealing with in-laws or something, and she, I finished her up, and she got up and walked out. And the other woman came, moved over to that chair, and that turned out to be her mother-in-law.
Oh, good heavens.
And I thought to myself, how horrific that she's saying it, not only in, with the mother-in-law sitting right in that room with me, you know.
Yes.
And I just thought, this is so horrible. And then she brings it out onto national TV, you know. And now, of course, today, that's, you know, that's a big moneymaker. And it's also very cheap to do reality TV.
Yes.
You know, non-union and non-script, well, partially non-scripted anyway. Those kinds of things that are just, that kind of take us away from,
It's going to be up to us to temper our judgment as we make our choices, and not just what can we do or what will work right now. But, you know, we really should think, what do we want to do and what should we do? Because those are the things that last over the air. You know, what's an example? How about the Andy Griffith Show?
Mm-hmm.
And one half of a century, that program has never been off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
When Andy Griffith was interviewed about that, and it all had been on maybe a mere 40 years at the time that he was interviewed, and he said, you know, the show, it's really a show about love.
Mm-hmm.
And because all the characters on there, they love each other, and that comes through in the writing and the script. So we really need to consider what we want. We tend to just put everything together quickly, experiment, and test it. And the 20th century has taught us a lot of lessons about that as we were, you know, we developed DDT that gets rid of the bugs, but then created worse problems. Asbestos protects us against heat and gives us insulation that created worse problems. And we tend to realize the consequences, the byproducts of our actions after we do it. But with the study of cycles, we have an opportunity to think ahead by looking behind. But, you know, we were talking about preserving so many of the great artistries and the craftsmanship from before, but there's something relatively new in the world of makeup in the form of permanent makeup. Is that relatively new to your business, Deborah?
I think so, and a lot more people have it than people would realize. And honestly, permanent makeup probably should be called something else. It is known technically as micropigmentation. But it's not always permanent for everybody, and permanent meaning a lifetime. For some people who have, whether you're covering scars, I had gotten involved by working with burn survivors and trying to help them. I mean, people became such virtual shut-ins because of how they looked, and that was so sad to me. And to be able to work with somebody and see that they could, you know, whether it was regular makeup or the combination of traditional makeup and permanent makeup that allowed them to walk out of, for some people, it was life-changing. You know, they were no longer shut-ins, and they were leaving their houses for the first time in God knows how many years. Michael Jackson, for example, I recently was reading about how in his autopsy they were talking about the tattooing that he had on his face, you know, his face and his body.
Yes.
You know, and tattooing is quite different from permanent makeup. I strongly recommend you do permanent makeup and not tattooing.
Yes.
There's a lot more control with the permanent makeup, and it can be altered and it can be changed. But if I, you know, I think back to Michael Jackson and how strange he looked, and understandably from being tattooed and not being tattooed well. But for some people, it's you know, especially in this society when everything is going so fast, for someone who doesn't have time to do makeup in the morning, you know, you can wake up with your, you know, beauty-wise, wake up with your eyeliner and your lip liner and, you know, your eyebrows done. And for people who don't have eyebrows, for people who can't do their own makeup for whatever physical disability they may have, whether
maybe they're older, a little arthritic or something,
and they can't see what they're doing, they can't hold their hands still. It's really, for me, I've been doing that for a couple of years now, and I just love it. I think the rewards in so many different areas are really terrific.
Well, you've helped a lot of people. I see on your site that you have a certification from the Phoenix Society for Burn Survivors, as well as many other certifications from the AAM, and folks, you'll see this on DeborahPullman.com. Mm-hmm. But there are some alternatives to some of the rather crude methods that are out there, aren't there, Deborah?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, I hope that we consider this an entertainment. We're going on. There's going to be some spectacular movies coming out in 2015. There's going to be another Avatar where the just about the entire set that you see in that case, you don't even see the actor at all. You see a virtual representation of the actor.
Yeah. It's so incredible. And if you watch any of the, like, behind-the-scenes things, which you – most, even like Boardwalk Empire, a lot of shows now, a lot of cable shows are offering. I think Damages did the same thing this last year or so. If you log on to, after watching their show, log on to their website to see whether it's an interview with the stars or how did we do this or the before and after or the building of, you know, so much stuff is available like that. And to see how these things are built, not even using people, is just, I mean, in some, you know, in some mediums, I think it's awesome.
Well, I'm beating on this drum of learning from the past, but, you know, another importance of continuity and the lessons that you're teaching us can be exemplified by George Lucas. When I saw a documentary, one of many made, about Star Wars, and there is, in the first Star Wars film, which is Episode 4, there's a great scene where they're taking off in the Millennium Falcon and they're fighting off some incoming fighter jets. And Luke Skywalker is in his pit there with a double-barreled gun shooting into space and knocking out these incoming crafts. And he's, they're coming in too fast. Keep firing. And he keeps firing. Well, what George Lucas let us see is that was based directly on a World War II film.
Yep.
And they did like a split screen, and they showed a film from inside of an American plane fighting off incoming flyers, jets, planes coming in and shooting at it. And almost frame for frame, what we see in Star Wars was a copy of that World War II film.
Wow.
Only we used blasts of light instead of tracer bullets, and the incoming planes were turned into incoming enemy space fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And what he and the characters R2-D2 and 3CPO were based on a many decades old black and white Japanese film. And there were two characters. You see the entire war that was witnessed. It was a statement on war as seen by these two peasants that were running away, trying to escape from the war and talking to each other. And they were very much like 3CPO and R2-D2, and which is entirely different. So here it is, old black and white footage. And that. So what we have to take as we go forward in our developing new technologies, new genres, and a new paradigm of thinking is to realize that the old ways work best, but to use them in new ways and not
Absolutely.
To abandon them.
Absolutely. You know, it's like, you know, if you wanted to have your shoes fixed, it's hard to, nowadays, people are more apt to just throw away their shoes because that craft, you know, how often do you see shoemakers on you know.
You ever get your shoes half sold lately? It doesn't happen.
Exactly.
You used to be able to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, or sew your own button on and everything like that. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, artistry, craftsmanship, prosumer instead of consumer. So we just have some adjusting to do, and it's very important because the paradigm shift that everyone said is coming, well, it's here, and we're in a transformation of it. The machine age from which we come, that's basically over. And the new information, the new space age, it's here. And really, for us to see where we're coming from, the magic screen of television and film really is a window to the mind and a mirror to the soul. If we lost all the historical records, and we still wanted to be able to have a reflection and a projection on our lives, we could do it strictly from media. We could.
Yeah.
The first film was made in the 19th century, and you could go back to the Shakespearean plays, the Greek tragedies, and so on mm-hmm. and so forth. And that would tell us the history of civilization.
Right. Thank God. You know, but
yeah.
also now I find it, you know, it's especially in documentary type stuff or histories of, you know, look at something like the Holocaust, for example, and thank God we have archives and we know
yeah.
how those records were found by, you know, heroes, actually, who, you know, made these tunnels way down underneath the ghettos and stuff and were able to, you know, just encourage the, you know, the Jews to document as much as they could because one day it will be found. And one day it was found, and I think it was on CBS on their website that they first started showing all these newly found archived just boxes and boxes and boxes, and now it's been turned into a library and library on, you know, that you can view online as well. And, you know, so for that kind of stuff, it's like, you know, thank God there's a means of preserving that, but it can be distorted. You know, also it's I don't know. It all depends. You know, what you're looking for and where you're going. You know, when you're going online. You know, when you're looking for something historical, you could be reading something because there's no. You know, when TV started and we had censors. You know, there are no censors online. You know, there's
yeah.
nobody to tell you that something is right or wrong, or Snopes. For example, who supposedly clarifies the validity of certain stories, and I don't know that I particularly believe Snopes. I believe them to be two people that live here in the valley in California, not for nothing. But who are they to determine what is right or wrong?
You know, everyone has a point of view, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people take for granted what they read online without just too. I guess it's just that easy.
Thank goodness the Holocaust archives were preserved, these Jewish records of what had happened. And perhaps one of the most important reasons for preserving that record is because of the possibility that it can happen again. Hence the
Absolutely.
Phrase, lest we forget, it can happen yep. again. And so the lessons of history are so carefully protected. People have risked their lives in order to protect our archives because they know of the importance for generations to come to know that information.
History should not be repeated, you know, in the case of the Holocaust, for example.
Exactly. You know. And, you know, the old saying, those who forget the lessons of the past are doomed to repeat them. And that's why we preserve the information and the lessons from the past so that we can learn from it, so we don't repeat our mistakes, and we can go on and do it better the next time. Mm-hmm. And your perspective of seeing the stage and seeing the screen from both sides is really fascinating. Whenever I see any of these documentaries that tell how these things were done, it absolutely fascinates me. Have the personalities of the stars, the genre of television that we're doing right now, forget the styles and the methods and the tools. So what do you see in our choices of entertainment now, Deborah, compared to when you first got into the business?
You know, I don't, it's hard to say really, because, you know, I remember when in the old days, I mean, before makeup was ever a real craft or anything, I've heard stories from old timers about how, like John Wayne, for example, if he wanted a makeup artist, his best friend wasn't working or anything, he'd say, come on, I'll bring you on and just be a makeup artist. And until, you know, it finally became a craft, you know, as television grew. And, you know, so for me, it's just interesting how things have, it almost feels to me like it's going back to that, in the respect that where I had to go through an apprenticeship to learn, you know, everything from putting on eyeliner to doing a casting of a face so that you could mold and make prosthetic pieces to change somebody into a character. Now, with, you know, when cable TV came along and non-union stuff, because they were cheaper, they had people who claimed to be, you know, there was no need for certification or proof. You know, if somebody wanted that person working with them, they could do it. You know, yes. And eventually the unions would have to fold and work into it. So it's interesting. You know, I used to say people would, like, just be in awe of soap stars, for example, or something. And, you know, I kind of say it, and I try not to say it too often because I can ruin a movie for anybody. did you see this or did you see that? And, you know, if you knew. But, I mean, any John, you know, Joe or Harry on the street could be turned into a movie star or, you know, a soap star just by virtue of hair, makeup, and wardrobe, you know.
Yeah.
So I really don't know. And, you know, then again, going back to reality TV, they certainly, most of what I've seen anyway, doesn't appear to me that they've had many acting lessons or...
No, and that hence the reality. I want to make a comment forecast on that as well. There are three cycles in the United States are physical, emotional, and intellectual. And what I find is that when we have a physical high in the highs and lows of the cycles, we tend to be more reality-based. Mm-hmm. When we have an emotional high in our emotional highs and lows, we tend to be more fantasy-based. And intellectual, well, when we do intellectual, we tend to be much more detailed-based, you know, interested in a Sherlock Holmes kind of thing, like the new television program Elementary, rather good program, by the way, in my opinion. And a lot of the forensic evidence programs of CSI, NCIS, and so, which has become such a popular genre because people are interested in these very involved plots, like you see on Leverage and on Burn Notice, and then being given all these wonderful details. So you're actually learning and being educated in our current intellectual high. But getting back to physical and emotional, if physical is reality-based and emotional is fantasy-based, where are we now? Well, the emotional high that we have been on in the 90s and the 2000s crossed down in 2009, and that's now declining. So we've become less fantasy-based while the physical cycle is still high here in America. And the physical cycle, it will cross down next year, 2013, in the spring. But we are at the end and a very energetic point of the physical high that gives us reality TV. So my prediction, Deborah, is that beginning next year, there's going to be a shakeup, and this will bring a decline of the reality-based programs like Cops and like some of these. Survivor is very much. You had survival programs in the 70s when we had the last physical high, and Real People, and That's Incredible. These were the reality-based programs back then for those of us old enough to remember. So that genre is about to end. And so it's gonna be different as cycles change, and the demands on makeup and lighting and everything else in the genre are going to change. But we really have to remember our lessons, don't we?
Yes, we really do. We really do. And it's just so fascinating to me, you know, to hear you talk about the different rhythms and different cycles. And there's just so much to be learned from it. It's just on your website as well. It was just fascinating to me. And made me want to learn more. You know, it's. I think it's important. All of that, you know, it's just so invaluable. You know, again, reminding us, you know, where we came from.
That's important. And I've discovered the abstract reality of periodic dynamic influences, rhythms within us. But that may be data. You know, the fact that those cycles exist. But the reason for this program, Deborah, is to have people like you with the wisdom. The wisdom is knowing how to use knowledge. And that comes from experience. I'm a theoretician. But what I learned is when I speak with people like you, true artsmen, crafts people in the field, leaders in your field, who have the experience, that's when I really begin to understand my own work. Because this abstract reality of all of us moving in cycles applies to each and every one of us, no matter what we're doing. And it's certainly holding true in your field as well. And this discussion helps us to explore that further.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So as we look forward, as we go forward into the new eras of change, the changing cycles, the new millennium, the world cycles that are changing, let us keep what is valuable from the past. Let us reform what we must not keep from the past and look forward towards adapting as we go into the virtual world, less physical, less a world of practical effects, and more of a world of transcending previous boundaries with a fluid expression of ideas, with our new tools of the internet, with our new tools of virtual high density media, and our way of communicating and transcending business in a world that is now flat, as it were. Well, we're just about wrapping up here, Deborah. I thank you so much for coming on and giving this perspective and sharing your very busy schedule with us as you're out there in California working every day.
I'm honored too that you were interested in it. It's for me. It was fun thinking about it because it brought up a whole bunch of old memories that I'd had and just. You know, just how it all, it's, so, you know, again, it's just kind of sad to me. There's so many, like, makeup schools, and basically they're out to take your money. You got to be really careful about what you want and be sure that what you want is what you really want at your heart. They're going to teach you what they want to teach you, and it's up to you to go out and really learn. And in my field, it's a craft, and you only do that by using your hands and learning your craft and practicing your craft. You know.
Well said, and a lesson for us all. Folks, Deborah Paulman, her site is at deborahpaulman.com. Again, her last name has two N's on the end of Paulman. Browse her site. There's some wonderful pictures there, before and after pictures. Her press releases or press coverage is on there and so forth. I've enjoyed going through the site, and I've enjoyed this conversation. So, folks, join us next week at the Cycles of Change radio program, where we will bring more exciting, wonderful people to share perspective on how we can take abstract knowledge, now that we know that there are cycles we can define, and apply it in all fields. Learn how it brings life into their field from a perspective that will help you in yours. I'm David Katzmeier, thanking Deborah Paulman, signing out until next week. Good night.